May 11th, 1987. This is Marcia Ripp and Chuck Coffey for National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Number 2, interviewing Aronel DeRoy Gruber, 2409 Marbury Road, Churchill. Aronel, tell me a little bit about your family.
My own family, or yes. I mean my immediate family,
immediate
my mother.
Yeah, your mother, parents. Your father.
Oh, well, I'll start with them. My mother came from Greenville, Mississippi, and my father was born and raised in Pittsburgh, and my grandmother and grandfather were Pittsburghers too, although they came over from Holland when they were young. Started in, as I say, in Pittsburgh, and my father met my mother at a resort called French Lick, and it was a spa, or the baths as they used to call them there, and somehow or another her mother took her there, and with the rest of the family, and my grandmother was always dragging these girls around because her husband had died when they were very young, and so, but she used to take them everywhere. And she was quite a lady. She was also from the South. She was born and raised in Birmingham. No, I don't know, now I can't remember. Mobile. You'll have to look at my mother's tape. My mother, I have a tape from my mother from Corrine Krauss, if
oh,
you want.
Oh, yes,
that.
Okay, well, that's
I, anyway, she was, I can't remember, it was Mobile I think it was Mobile, Alabama, but I'm a little fuzzy on that now. Since mother died, I forget a lot of these things. Anyway, they and their side of the family came from Lyon. Our Barbie today is in the midst of that Lyon, France.
Yes.
That was where they were from, on my grandmother's side of the family originally. And as I say, they came to the South. So our family was kind of very Southern-oriented or Pittsburgh-oriented. Grandpa DeRoy was in the jewelry business, and my father didn't go into the business. He went to medical school and went on to become a dentist. So he never went into the business. And unfortunately, in the meantime, let's see what else has happened. Then he married my mother, and I had one sister who was a half-sister who is still living. She was a lot older than I was, and she had, her mother died when she was a child, so she was, my father remarried later on and married her. Then here comes her. Then in the meantime, I was born in Pittsburgh, went to grade school at Whiteman School, Taylor Alderdice, and then Carnegie Mellon. I never gotten out of Pittsburgh. I always thought I would, and I never wanted to stay here. I went to Trapphegan one summer to study fashion, art, and illustrating, and other than that, and as a counselor, an art counselor, an art and swimming counselor at a girls' camp up in the Adirondacks, I never got out of Pittsburgh. So let's see what else. I got married when I was still in college, and worked as a fashion coordinator for Eleanor Reamer.
That's at Kaufman's.
At Kaufman's department store. And as the fabric fashion coordinator, I put on fabric fashion shows for Mike Schwartz, who was then the buyer of the fabric department. And I coordinated both that and the windows and stuff like that. And then finally, after 3 years of working after let's see, I was a year in school, and then another year, 2 years at Kaufman's. I started to raise a family and worked until I was about 8 months pregnant, and then quit and had my first child. It was John, J-O-N, John. Well, John D. Roy Gruber. And then that was in the midst of the war, and we went off to, Irv's job then was to build a war plant for, or to build a new pipe mill for sawmill manufacturing. So we moved, we couldn't find a house there to rent, so we moved to Youngstown. And so we lived in Youngstown for 2 years. And then moved back to Pittsburgh. While I was in Youngstown, I had a baby that would have been like 10 months apart from John, and for 11 months they were real close, and the baby died after about four or five days was preemie. And then I had Jamie, and John and Jamie are 3 years apart. She's, you know, a girl, as you well know. And she's, her name is Jamie DeRoy Gruber, and she goes by just Jamie DeRoy. The third child didn't come along for quite a while. That was Terry. He was a boy, my youngest, that's the boy, and he is, he and John are 10 years apart, so he's 30-something, I forget. Anyway, in between this, before I had Terry, I was working, I had started painting and doing that a great deal, and I had done that even back in high school. I was in Sam Rosenberg's Y class that he had started many years ago, and at that point it was more just a life class. And then after the kids were getting a little up and beyond the diaper stage, I started going back to painting. And I was in Youngstown, I went over to the Butler Institute and worked for a short while. And then I had Jamie, so I quit that. And then I came back, when I came back to Pittsburgh, I went back into that Sam Rosenberg special class that he had, which a lot of us are part of, that were such as Shelley Blumenfeld and myself. We all started with Sam, Gertie Half, Gollum, and so forth and so forth. So that was our beginning of the art career, more or less, in a more serious way. I think I won a prize that created this whole thing by, I entered a show in New York, and the first prize besides the monetary prize was I won a one-man show in New York, and one-person show, excuse me.
And, what year was this?
Oh, God, I don't know, I think 1958. Something like that. I'll have to give you a bio. I'll get her one to give me, to get some bio material, because the dates I'm really bad on. Something around 1958 or 59. I think it could have even been 57, but I can't recall. Prior to that, I had won the first prize I think I ever won in Pittsburgh was the 100 Friends of Art. My first sculpture. My first painting was purchased by the 100 Friends of Art, and G. David Thompson was on the was one of the jurors, and Ken Johnstone, who was an architect. Those are the two that I can recall, and that sort of gave me this big spurt of of going on, I guess, for that show, trying out for that show in New York.
Would you remember what year it was you won the prize for?
Well, they're years? Real close together. I think one was 58, and again, I'll have to give you those dates. I think it was, one was 58 and one was 59.
Were these oils?
The first painting that I won a prize on was one of the large encaustics. No, it wasn't encaustic. It was probably water-based paint, because I was working a great deal in that medium, but it was, I can't think of the name of the darn stuff, particularly.
Well, we'll come back.
It's a water-based paint, but it was paint. It was a big, huge painting on paper, and I can't remember because I don't use that kind of paint anymore. Anyway, let's see, my dates are really bad. Then from that point on, I was sort of, I won for that prize, and I had shows in New York with Bertha Schaefer Gallery, who then became my dealer. And I don't know how much you wanted this art career, but...
We won a lot of it.
It's broken. Okay, excuse me. Okay, fix it. Take it home. Excuse me. If I don't tell them this is what I mean, I have this guy coming with all the porch furniture to go out. Anyway, to go on. So I went to... Then I started going back and forth to New York a lot, and then I won quite a few opportunities through the USIA. Somehow or another, they saw my work when I had these New York shows, and I was invited to have a show at the United States Information Agency in Milan. And then I had found the gallery in Rome called Gallery 88 or Ottantotto in Italian. And then I had some showings in small showings in Greece, because I had given a painting to the victims of the Greek earthquake, whatever year that was, 61, I guess. And so that was when I got involved with that whole thing. But that was like about a month tour, you know, that it went on, where I went to Milan, had the show, then I went to Greece, then the show went to Rome. And then I was in quite a few shows that were traveled and were shows that went to the Far East and Japan and all sorts of that whole area. Some were with one in Romania. But those figures, I mean, I'll have to give you the catalogs and stuff like that, because I never try to clutter my head with the past. But I have it on paper.
All right, that's easy.
Okay, now what else?
Now, when did you go into the sculptor end, and how did you develop what you have, which is very unique?
Well, let's see. I was having a show in... I was supposed to have a show in... after the other bunch in Milan and Madrid. And this gallery, Iwana Morda, she came to Pittsburgh during an international and saw my work and asked me to have a show there. And I found that I was working at that point in three-dimensional wall sculptures that were either combination wood and, the big heavy metal pieces that I had been doing, and they were too heavy to transport to Spain. So that's when I decided to try something that was, I had 2 years or, you know, in advance or to work out things, so I started working in combinations. Well, then I just worked in plexiglass. I didn't combine the metal and plex for a little while. But the pieces like the metal sculptures and so forth, I started that, I think, due to the fact that I had, I like roaming around all the, what do you call those?
Flea markets.
Garage sales? No, in the, you know, where they, the junk, where they take metal. No, we're the metal scrapyard. I used to hound the scrapyard men for materials, but also Herb was in the steel forging business, and I had started forging metals out there and working in the with the furnaces, and I sort of did a lot of these pieces that were inspired by the materials themselves. And then I went into the, I found some of these rounded cornered squares. I had been working in that form first in paintings. I don't know what made me do that. Something, I've forgotten what. I mean, I just decided I liked the geometric quality of it. And I started working in that, and from that I even developed it into sculpture. And once I was out at a one of the plants, and I found out that this man had this rounded cornered square form that he sometimes had scrap of and so forth. And I bought scrap from, or would get scrap from Wimmer scrap yards and places like that, especially stainless steel and aluminum and bronze and stuff like that. I, you know, gather up and accumulate it over in my studio. My first studio, incidentally, was in the basement of our house on half of a double on Beechwood Boulevard. And I used to work right beside the gas meter. That was when I painted, but not sculpted. I was doing the sculpture out of the house. And I started working more intensely, I got Bob Landau's garage apartment was vacant. They had an apartment over their garage.
Where was that?
On Darlington, right near the park. And I was still working then in painting as well, and I did a lot of painting over there, painting, collage, whatever, and then went to the plant to do the sculpture because I couldn't weld over there, and I did a tremendous amount of welding on, you know, with them over there on Saturdays when they would allow me in without the problems. And his plant superintendent was a crazy Armenian who loved the, who was nuts enough to let, you know, work for me on Saturdays. And so we worked over there and we throw things in the forge, and including shish kebab, and make food and do all kinds of stuff. But anyway, we worked over there on weekends, and that's when I did most of my metal sculptures. And that was fine until the union, you know, became a problem, and then I quit doing those over there and started working in, you know, with fabricators and big fabricators. So I, now the big sculptures that I do, I usually work with local fabricators that are, you know, let's say out of the city a little bit, or different. I have different ones that I've worked with, but I go into their plants, and it's usually non-union type places that'll let me come over and mess around.
Do you take a blueprint? How do you communicate what you want?
Well, I usually do a model. I do a model in wood, you know, some kind of real soft wood, Then I transferred it into a metal, that one piece that's down there that is about this big. When I was trying for competition, I wanted to transfer it into a form where it was welded together to see, you know, strengths and so forth. And when they're really big ones, I have to do engineering drawing. I don't do the engineering drawings. I had a we used to have a neighbor next door who was a very good MIT graduate and engineer, and Dave D'Apollonia, and he used to help me with the, they have an engineering firm, and he would do the calculations for me. This is not recently, but when I did the first huge ones that were done for Eddie Lewis's company, then he wasn't with DeBartolo then. It was
Oxford Development then?
I don't know what the heck they called it. I think it became Oxford Development, but it was for a big sculpture, big huge sculpture that was done for a mall down in West Virginia, and the architect selected my work from all the ones that he had people submit drawings for. And I had done that sculpture, that purple one that's out,
yes,
in the yard, and they came out and saw that and decided they liked it. This is Mr. Coffee. Chuck Coffee.
I know Marcia.
Yes.
Marcia, you know. That's probably, that I really did a large version of that with plexiglass inserts in it, huge ones, and then they removed the plexiglass inserts after it was finished because the kids kept throwing all kinds of garbage in the water, and it would ruin the plexiglass. That ended that.
How did you feel about that? Did that upset you? Did it change the feeling of your piece? Did you want to make an adjustment?
Well, it actually, I kind of liked it with the plexiglass in it, but I kept the plexiglass, one of them, somebody stole about five of them, and I was able to, thank God, salvage two of them, so I made a sculpture out of it. So, a separate sculpture out of the one I salvaged. So I felt that at least I got that much out of it. I think I only got one out of it. And I think somebody down in whatever that town is in West Virginia, Melbourne. No, that's down the one of the DeBartolo. Or where's the one that is in West Virginia?
Parkersburg.
I don't remember the name of it. Anyway, that mall, somebody around there has a piece of, there are four people who have my sculptures. they're not supposed to. Then,
I'm going to stop 1 second.
Perfect.
No, it's perfectly all right. It's very normal. All right, after you did that, then you got into the smaller plexiglass pieces, or?
Well, they were all going on simultaneously. I didn't do the big ones. You don't get that many jobs, and you don't do those continuously, you know. I was working on the smaller plexiglass sculptures for a long while. And when I say smaller, some are, you know, like the one at the Hillman Library,
yes,
isn't exactly small. But they're different. I just kind of worked on things when I had the opportunity and when I had the need for them more than anything. Or when I had the inspiration to work on them. slowly I did, the problem with the sculptures was that I started doing less and less painting because of it, because it became more of a problem to do both at the same time and have the time to do them all. I did later go back to painting again, and when I got that grant to go to Ossawa, and got in, it's like a McDowell, you know, it's like Yaddo or any of those. You go and they you apply, and usually you get thrown out, you get rejected. But fortunately, I got into this one, and it was so I started to paint again. But that's much more recent. That was about 4 or 5 years ago. And so I've been, that's when I started getting more into that phase of it. And doing painting when I could. But I'm still in that kind of bind that I have where I can't get time to do everything. So that's when after I had the fire, after our house burned and we had to live in an apartment for a year in that little tiny cubicle, I started doing more photography than anything. But I had been photographing all along, so that was why the photography sort of started to take some precedence at that point. I had been in some photography shows previously and won the top color prize in at Westmoreland Community College, and so that sort of inspired me when I went. So I started doing more of that, and this recent one, I guess, gave me the.
What recent one? You mean?
The one that just. Is opening on the south side, that the Pittsburgh, it's called PSA, Pittsburgh Society of Regional Artists. And they had an open competition, and the girl from the woman from the Frick Museum, who is the curator, and Harry Schwagler, the jurist, and they awarded me the Outstanding Achievement Award, and they picked only four photographs for the show, and I was one of the four, and I won the prize, one of the prizes. There's two prizes today. And Henry won. He won it for painting, and I won it for photography. And if you have a chance, go see it. It's at Studio Z, and it's on the south side, and that's going on through June 8th. And so... that really is the most recent thing. So now, I guess, what do you want to go backwards, I guess?
But tell me about this. What is it, Yarrisburg, did you say? First of all,
Y-A-D-D-O. I never got into it.
Okay, what does Y-A-D-D-O mean? And
well, I don't really know what it stands for. McDowell, Yaddo, the Virginia, there's one of these in Virginia, and Ossawa, where are all... communities where they take a couple of painters, a couple of sculptors, musicians, writers, and they all go to work, and they feed you, they give you a supply with studio space, whatever you need, and you do nothing but, you know, get up in the morning and go to work, feed yourself and go to work.
Now, where is this? Where was
I don't really remember. I just threw that name out because it isn't really important.
Oh.
But, I mean, because that's not one that I've applied to. I heard about Ossawa because of Terry. And he knew about Ossawa because somebody he knew had... thought that it was such a great, it's an artist colony, and as I say there, they allow you to come and work there, and you are free to work uninterrupted without all the city problems and life around you and telephones and so forth. And this is a little tiny island. It's 20 miles south of Savannah, and you can only get there by boat. And It's an island where there's only a government project there, and no cars, just their bus and the government car, which is on another part of the island. And there are feral animals that just roam the island. There are Brahmin bulls and some kind of these strange little goats.
Let's see. Chuck tells me that we're probably at the end of this side of the tape.
Okay.